From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Got John here. Hi, John.
Hello.
And myself, Stuart, but I know Hannah is out partying it up. Where is he this time?
I don't know. Is he hanging out with the Knights of Columbus? He's pretty serious into that.
Knights of Columbus.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows where he's gone?
Kicking back the old Jesus juice there.
Oh, he's at Neverland then, is he? Okay.
No.
Yeah, keep them iron undies on, Hannah. That's all I'm saying to you down that place. But Neverland, never take your kids there, land. That's what I call it. But never mind. Don't worry about Michael Jackson. He's dead. But what we are going to talk about this week is... and thanks to Garrow for coming on for the last couple of episodes. They've been very popular, let's say that much. And he will be back again very soon, of course.
Yeah, we got an idea. We may have the ultimate show idea for him.
Yeah, one that
the next couple of weeks.
One that I dreamed up this morning in haste, thinking, "What the hell are we going to do?"
And then I was like, "That's going to be gold."
Yeah, but we need to have Hunter on for that as well.
Yes, we do.
Well, let's just say I'm willing to get the boots put into me again. That's all I'm saying. No more about that. Hey, apparently, most downloaded show we've ever done was when I got kicked about for 110 minutes. So I'll do it again.
Yeah.
Before we get into today's film that we are discussing, we want to send a big RIP out to Tommy Ramone, who we lost the other day, that was hard. I was saying along the social media, I said, I can't look at those Ramones albums now, the first three with him in it, and just think they're all dead. It's tough to just sort of, you know, just contemplate that they're all gone. It's hard.
It doesn't seem right in the world. It does not seem right.
No, it really doesn't. It's you think, you look and you go, Tommy, Joey, Dee Dee, Johnny, all gone. You think, thank God we got Marky left, you know?
Yeah.
We got CJ and Richie, but we really got, you know, of the really most popular Ramones members, we got Marky left.
Right.
And what are you going to do, God? Take Marky off us next? Yeah, go on, God, play some more jokes. You're going to take next Iggy Pop office? Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yes.
That's all
nothing,
we need.
Nothing seems to kill Iggy Pop. Seems like he'd have been dead years ago.
Don't say that, please. We don't need to lose.
Oh, that's right. I may have killed Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That's right.
That creeped me out enough.
Yeah.
You may have... do a show about the Ramones, and then Tommy kicks it a couple of weeks later, so it's like, ugh.
Well, the guys we're discussing in this film tonight are not getting any younger, so shit, touch wood, we're on not placing the old Midnight Movie Cowboys curse on them.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway, the film that we are discussing tonight is a buddy cop film. And you're going, oh, Grouse, Lethal Weapon. No. Last Boy Scout.
No.
What's some others, John? Quick, help me out.
48 hours,
yeah. No.
Bad Boys 1 and 2.
Oh, God. Oh, no. None of that generic pop it in a blender, paint by numbers crap. We're going to be talking about, what would you call this, one of the first buddy cop movies ever?
Okay, here's the thing, is there is a there's a Pete Hyams movie from around the same time.
Right.
With Elliot Gould and Robert Blake. Mm. And I saw it not long ago, and supposedly the release of Freebie and the Bean was delayed for a while because of the similarities to this film. And it was called Busting.
Oh, and right. Okay, I've seen the VHS around on the shelf, but I never rented it.
It was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not the biggest Elliot Gould fan. He's got like a big, massive Mr. Red head for me. I just can't look at it, so...
Yeah, I'm mystified that he was a star. Elliot Gould's one of those guys I can't figure out how he was a box office draw. And, you know, Robert Blake's like a, you know, the killer who escaped conviction, so he's a little weird to watch these days. Yeah, but it wasn't anything exceptional. Like, when I watched it, it was kind of okay, it's a 1974 crime film, and that's really all I could give it. But it may have been the first buddy cop movie. But then Freebie and the Bean is like the first one that where the formula is really there.
Yeah,
you know, like the everything that's established in these movies to today, they still make this nonsense, was really established by Freebie and the Bean. I think it kind of set the mold.
Yeah, and as John said, Freebie and the Bean is the one we're talking about today from 1974. Best Christmas movie ever, John. Do you know why I say that?
Why is that?
Because it was released on 25th of December, 1974. What a stupid time to put out a film like that on Christmas Day.
But apparently it did well. Like, some sources say it actually did very well. Like, it was a big hit. But critics hated it. But they're going to hate a movie like this anyway.
Oh, don't get me started on that. I'm going to say this before I forget now. Our friends over at Rotten Tomatoes have given this a 30%. I'm dumbfounded that it got that. But then again, I'm not dumbfounded because it's Rotten Tomatoes and they're idiots.
Right.
I was reading some of the reviews and there. I thought, you got to be joking. It's a great movie. Anyway, we'll get into it. Anyway, this film stars James Caan and Alan Arkin.
Yep.
And Loretta Sweet for about, what, 4 seconds?
I'd say about 5 minutes.
My God, I honestly sat there through the film thinking, hang on, Loretta Sweet's in this movie, where is she? I mean, you can't miss her, but, you know, she's a unique looking woman, but, and there she is at the last 5 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
Mild spoiler, but doesn't matter.
And it was this whole plot thing that I was like, that I completely forgotten about.
Yeah.
Like, for the film's running time, because the script kind of goes all over the place, so.
Oh, it really does, yeah.
I totally forgot about the plot that was set up at the beginning. It was like, oh, that was her. Oh, I totally forgot that happened. You know, because so much happens in this film.
Oh, it really does.
But an hour, 40 minutes or 50 minutes.
Hour 53, it runs, yeah.
Yeah.
So just shave under 2 hours. But what I found with this one was it was more unconventional than the other buddy cop films to follow in the 80s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Much different for the fact that you brought up earlier when we were talking that... they hate each other in this film.
Yeah.
Freebie and the Bean dislike each other.
Yeah, they don't get along.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And there's very few moments where they do actually share, sort of get on the same sort of wavelength as each other. It doesn't really happen. It's not like a Riggs and Murtaugh or, you know, Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte in 48 Hours. It's nothing like that. It's completely different. Now, Alan Arkin hates this movie. Did you know that?
Yeah, I saw that in the headline. I didn't read into it, but I found that strange.
He absolutely hates this movie. It doesn't exist to him, as far as I'm concerned. Or as far as he's concerned,
wow.
Sorry. Yeah, no, because someone was saying on a commentary that he was on, some later film he did in the 2000s, somebody mentioned about a Freebie and the Bean sequel, and Alan Arkin said, I wish there was never a first one.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why there wasn't one.
There wasn't one. And, it came, I actually thought, okay, that must come down to him and James Caan being two very headstrong actors. It did. Apparently, they got on like an absolute house on fire on the set. It came down to the writer-director, Richard Rush, who they just despised.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Richard Rush has that weird career where he like would make a movie every 8 or 9 years. But it was always be a big studio thing. Like, he always had a deal with the studio. But like, he almost directed Die Hard 3. Like, people forget that. He almost did a Die Hard 3 that was going to be set on a cruise ship. And because Bruce Willis had become friends with him while filming Color of Night, I think was the name of the movie.
I am shocked. I saw that at the drive, and I brought it up before on a previous show, and it was just god-awful. I couldn't believe that. That was Richard Rush.
I saw it opening day in Memphis. I actually cut a class that day at school just to go to a movie. And I went to see it because I was like, yeah, Richard Rush has made a new movie. And you know, because that's the way I looked at things. I was like, oh, it's going to be so cool. And then I was like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But now, one that he did in 1980, The Stuntman, I've never seen with Peter O'Toole.
It's interesting. Really interesting. But it was very uncommercial. It was very long.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't the type of film you could really market to audiences back then. The funny thing is, I remember it got good reviews, and CBS, when they got the movie for their network showing like 2 years later, like on a Saturday night or whatever, it was a big deal. Like, back then, a network TV screening could kind of save a movie's reputation a little bit. Like, sometimes they found their audience, and I think Freebie and the Bean, like got such great ratings on network TV whenever they would air it that there was the TV show in like 1979.
So John, how did Kiss Meets a Fan of the Park go so wrong?
I don't know.
Who knows? What a mystery that one is, right?
I feel like Kiss was on their way out, like when that movie was airing, like they were already becoming the Kiss.
All right, enough Kiss. I'm sick to death of bloody Kiss these days.
Yeah, I don't think we should ever mention them again.
Yeah, no, we should put like a bleep every time we bring up Kiss's name.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah, loop another band's name in there, like say the Doors or something.
Yeah, the Stooges or somebody.
Yeah. The Monks.
Okay. But yeah, apparently Richard Rush was a nightmare to deal with, and he actually was warned against Alan Arkin, he warned others not to use Alan Arkin in their future movies after making Freebie and the Bean. Oh. So it's pretty ugly amongst them three. But
that's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it really is. Now, the stuntman, I'll get back to the stuntman. Did I hear, or am I mistaken, that there was autobiographical on Rush? Was he a stuntman at one point? Or am I missing
I can't
something?
Remember. It seems like... I know he worked for AIP and directed like some biker movies for them, and I don't know if it was based on his experiences or what he got to know from the stuntman. I'm not aware of him actually being one.
Okay. Because he did Psych it's Out. Like, I didn't know he did Psych Out. I've got that one as part of a double feature with this film called The Trip with Peter Fonda.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say it was a good movie, Psych Out. It was, you know.
Well, he did some respectable work in the 60s. He did those type of independent movies for AIP that they, like, noticed and was like, oh, this guy's gonna go on to big things. And I think Freebie and the Bean was supposed to be his big studio action comedy picture, like, where he literally invents a genre that's, you know, still. And this movie's still ripped off today. Like, there were things I was spotting, and it's like, you know, man, I see this reused in movies so often. But this kind of does it the best, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it a lot more than, say... Look, I've seen this film about three times now. First time I ever saw it was on VHS, you know, back in the pan and scan. And that was an ugly pan and scan, because this film shot in scope, and it used a lot of its wide Vista visuals in it. But when I watched it again on the DVD, actually, I got this through Hunter. He sent it to me from the Warner Archives. Thanks, mate.
Uh-huh.
And years ago, this was. But when I finally saw it on the widescreen version of the DVD, I started to appreciate it a bit more. And I actually enjoyed it more than, say, a Lethal Weapon. I don't know. Yeah. Just when I look at stuff like Lethal Weapon now, Freebie the Bean seems to have aged better than Lethal Weapon. Does that...
I know. It is strange. I noticed that, too.
Yeah. Lethal Weapon looked more dated, which was from 87, than Freebie and the Bean, which was 74.
Because I first saw this film like in 2000. I rented the VHS tape. I probably saw parts of it on the CBS movie in the early 80s, cut for TV, and didn't really stick with it. And, you know, just watched bits and pieces and tuned out because I was a kid. Just didn't care about that stuff. And then I rented it in 2000 and thought it was a lot of fun in terms of the acting, but couldn't really appreciate the action. Because the pan and scan was just like all over the place. And so when I finally saw it today for the first time in scope, because I have the Warner Archives version, and man, the car stunts in San Francisco, unbelievable.
Unreal, like, aren't they?
They're
are
done
so
in
good.
Long takes, like they're not quick cut to try to hide stuff or anything.
Yeah.
It's just
that's
there,
a good point.
You know?
That's a good point, because there's a lot of long scenes in this movie, and for an action film, comedy action movie, that's unheard of these days. Usually it's all that, you know, kinetic sort of, you know, ADD type editing, which I just absolutely despise.
Right.
But this one here got long scenes when they're talking to that gay guy in the bathtub, and, you know, that runs about 2 or 3 minutes, and you got just long takes of them in the car talking. And I tell you who borrowed from this movie. Okay, even though he ripped off City on Fire, you know which one film I'm talking about? Reservoir Dogs borrowed a lot from Freebie and the Bean as well.
Oh, I think so too.
Even though they're not dealing with cops, not dealing with cops, they're dealing with the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of dialogue in the car remind me of Reservoir Dogs, remind me of Freebie and the Bean.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
It's like I noticed, and but it's like during the stunt work, like there's a scene where Freebie chases after these guys on a motorcycle, And there's a long take of James Caan's stuntman going over cars in San Francisco traffic.
How good is that? That was an awesome stunt. Yeah.
It was just, I was like, man, I hope Caan's stunt double got like really good pay, because some of the stuff that guy was doing, it was crazy. And then we cut back to Jimmy Caan kind of landing and, you know, just looking like James Caan and going, ah.
Even though his stuntman looked nothing like James Caan. He was like maybe 15 years younger.
You know, really exposed on the screen as the stuntman.
Did you notice one scene, John, when he was actually doing that motorbike stunt, that he was getting too close to the camera? They actually blurred out the stuntman's face.
Yeah, I noticed some stuff where it looked like...
They hazed out his face, so you couldn't see it was actually not James Caan.
Like, it wasn't planned. Or then they cut to James Caan on the motorcycle real quick, you know, to kind of make up for it. And a guy on my Facebook page today, when I said I was doing this, he's a filmmaker, and he talked to Richard Rush a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Cinema convention, and he asked him about some shots in that movie that he never forgot, some of the stunt work shots and stuff. And Richard was just like, well, you know, sometimes you really don't plan for them to be as good as they are. Like a lot of that stuff is accidental. Like, it just ended up that way.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's almost like a movie that's, like, fantastic by accident, you know?
Yeah. How did you find...
Which is my free-for-all.
Yeah, how'd you find the pairing of Caan and Arkin? I thought they were fantastic.
I thought they were great, because I totally believe they were like cop partners. You know, they just seemed like they were perfect for the roles. It's just like, and they're despising of each other, but yet they're still helping each other constantly. It just worked, and that doesn't work in every movie.
Yeah, and it doesn't. I mean, everyone always goes on about, oh, Riggs and Murtagh, Danny Glover, Mel Gibson were the best. Nah, I'm sorry. I think James Caan, Alan Arkin. I mean, I totally believed Alan Arkin was Hispanic in this, even though he's not. He's Jewish, but...
I know.
I totally bought into him being Hispanic. And same with Valerie Harper as his wife. Man, she was really good for the small amount of screen time she got.
She was outstanding in that. Apparently, this is a bit of a star-making performance for her.
Oh, really? That's what got her the spot as Rhoda on Mary Tyler Moore, you reckon?
I don't know if it got her the spot, but I know she got a lot of attention for this role or something. Like, it was one of her... It's considered one of her better performances.
Yeah, it's odd, because she gets, what, two scenes? Yeah, quite lengthy scenes, right. But she's only in it for a very short amount of time. I kind of wish it was a bit more of her, but then again, it felt like the whole wife of the Bean, or Bean's wife, as she's credited, very crudely.
Right.
seemed like a subplot they didn't need. It's odd. It's like, you could have cut it, and you wouldn't have missed it, but you also wanted more of it.
Well, it's the work of two screenwriters, I noticed. Like, the credits say Floyd Muttrix did the story, which means basically he wrote the original script, and then Robert Kaufman did a rewrite, and I wonder if some of that was left over from the original Floyd Muttrix script. That would be my best guess.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, and they just left it in because they said, okay, we got Valerie Harper for a week, so let's use her in these scenes. You know, and who knows, like, maybe they needed stuff like that. If Richard Rush was not getting along with James Caan and Alan Arkin, maybe they needed those actors' scenes, you know, just to appease them.
Possibly. But one of the
reasons... It is funny when Freebie's, like, calling... Yeah, the Bean on the phone and going, okay, ask her about the phone bill. I mean, that's so funny.
Yeah, he was totally goading him to everything he was. He was totally doing it. Yeah.
Terrific scene, if anything, even if it seemed a little out of place.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned about the actual script being a bit muddled.
Yeah.
Did you find it hard to follow at all?
Not really, because it kind of... I mean, you've got James Caan and Alan Arkin, I think they're almost in every scene. Like,
pretty much, yeah.
They're pretty much like taking you through like a couple of really bad work shifts. So it didn't matter that you couldn't follow the plot as well as you might have if it were more streamlined to be story based. But obviously, it wasn't. It was based on the movie's really based on their performances and their characters. Like, it's character driven more than story driven. Because at times I was forgetting. I was like, well, wait a minute, why is this transvestite doing this? You know, wait a minute, is he the hitman? I was just like completely baffled sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of throws you off, because it's throwing so much at you. Like, you're literally either laughing at the movie, or you're just like stunned at the car chases. Or so there's some shootouts in this film that are very interestingly staged. They're not like shootouts in other movies. Like, they're confusing and crazy and and they go for like an artistic shot that's really weird, like the shooting at the hitman and the elevators going down from the dentist's office. It's like just really strange stuff like that. It's just like it's that kind of fine line between major studio filmmaking and a director that's putting his personal voice in there and weird sense of humor. Like, it's some strange stuff in there.
I mean, let's say this. They are not afraid to use their guns in this film. I mean, just about everybody gets shot up.
Well, like a dentist assistant or nurse, she gets shot in the hip.
Yeah.
It's just like, you just don't see stuff like that in most movies where an innocent bystander gets clipped, you know? It's like, whoa.
Or you shoot your protagonist in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like that final fight between Freebie and the transvestite killer. It's really weird and strange. Like, it's exciting and bizarre, but I think that's a type of unique stuff that makes the movie easily rewatchable. Whereas if you got some bland A, B, and C, you know, by the numbers film, it just doesn't draw you back as much. Like, I haven't watched any of the Lethal Weapon sequels, I think, a second or third time.
Yeah, I know. I've seen 3 once in the theater. That was enough. Saw 4 once. That was enough.
Yeah.
I saw 2 maybe a couple of times and 1 a couple of times, and that was about it. The one thing is I took away from this film was, I said, they didn't hide behind explosions. The two main guys walking down the street in slow motion while an explosion's going on behind. There's nothing like that. If you're looking for loud sound design explosions, you're going to be disappointed because you're not going to get it. But as John said... As John said, you're going to get a lot of car chases... And very well done as well. Brilliantly done.
Yeah.
Brilliantly shot. And character performances. Character acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should have been the basis for all of those films to follow, and it never really was. And nobody does unrealistic things with their guns. You know, like, nobody's doing John Woo stuff with, like, two guns or anything like that. So it's like... It's funny because it's coming off of The French Connection and Bullet. And Dirty Harry, being the big hits in the previous years.
Yeah.
So it's kind of following up on that and doing its own thing. And it's got a pretty good spin. It's unfortunate that Richard Rush didn't do, like, a different cop movie every couple of years before he did The Stuntman. So it's... Because he's got a unique style for that genre.
Yeah, he does. He reminds me a little bit of Phil Juanu, who did State of Grace, you know, many, many years later. Did you know there was a Freebie and the Bean TV show?
Yeah, I remember it being on.
Really? I've never seen an episode of it.
I remember it being on. It was briefly, it was just a couple of months, and I think, like I had said before, I think it was because Freebie and the Bean had good ratings when CBS would show it as their Saturday night movie.
Yeah.
You know, back then, like I said, if a movie was shown on network TV, sometimes it could get a second life. Like, because, there's only 3 or 4 channels, everybody's watching them. Cable hadn't taken over the airwaves at the time, so... Yeah, like Freebie and the Bean had a huge following. I remember in the 70s, my uncle was a big fan of the movie, and I think my dad liked it too, so I think it had its popularity.
You know how popular it is in my house? I have the Daybill poster of it, the original from 74.
Oh, my!
Yeah. Stashed away. I just found them as I was doing a bit of a clear out. I've got an old suitcase up on top shelf, and I thought, I'll look what's in here, and... Oh, shit, all my Daybills, that's right. And holy shit, a Freebie and the Bean isn't in there.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really fucking tempted to take them to, like, a picture framer and get some sort of custom-sized frames made up, because obviously who makes frames the size of Daybill posters, and Daybill posters all come in different sizes. But, so I've got a whole bunch of Daybills. I really wouldn't mind putting up in the theater room, you know? Freebie and the Bean.
Yeah.
I've got the Porky's one, the first Porky's one. Stuff like that. Just stick them up inside the theater or outside the theater wall. But, I mean, who else is in this film? Alex Rocco. Where do I know that name from? The Godfather?
Godfather was the lead in Russ Meyer's Motorpsycho in memorable performances and stuff like The Friends of Eddie Coyle, Detroit 9000. Really good actor, always dependable.
Okay. I'm not familiar with it. I know the name, but that's about it. I didn't really know many other people in this film besides Alan Arkin and then James Caan, Valerie Harper, and Loretta Swit. That was about it.
Yeah, Rocco was Mo Green in The Godfather.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it has Chuck Bale as the Cadillac salesman, and the funny thing is Chuck Bale is a very famous stuntman in Hollywood and probably designed all the stunts in this film.
Oh, really?
And Chuck Bale... He directed Cleopatra Jones in the Casino of Gold. Wonderful stunt-filled Shaw Brothers co-production with Warner Brothers, and I think it was because of his work on stuff like Freebie and the Bean.
How about we review that one time, John? You and I and Hannah. Cleopatra Jones.
Yeah. No, we can review that. I'd be totally up for it.
Oh, good, because I've got both myself. Anyway, I've got both films.
Right.
Yeah. I remember seeing Cleopatra.
I traded in my Cleopatra Jones, but
jeez. Which one had Antonio Fargas in it? Was it the Casino of Gold?
No, he
was the first one.
No, he was in the first one. Some other actors were in the second one, like Albert Popwell, who's always in every dirty.
Oh God, yeah, he was one of Clint Eastwood's closest friends, wasn't he?
He must have been buddies with him because he's in a lot of Eastwood movies.
Yeah, I remember reading a book about Eastwood, and Albert Popwell was one of his closest friends. Him and
might have been.
Yeah, him and Jeffrey Lewis, they were all like old friends with each other.
Yeah, because I would guess that somebody like Eastwood, if you see same actors, you know, in so many different movies of his, like going across his genres and stuff, like if they're in Pink Cadillac and a Dirty Harry movie, he's probably good buddies with him.
And Buddy Van Horn as well. He does a lot a lot of Eastwood stuff.
Hey everybody, this is Josh.
I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Luke.
And we are the Cromcast. We talk about Robert E. Howard,
Conan the Barbarian,
and other weird fiction.
You can find us on the web at thecromcast.blogspot.com. And if you do not listen, then to hell with you.
Yeah, get back to Freebie and the Bean. What I found ironic was that the two actors in this film both have sons who are, working actors in Hollywood still.
Yeah, that's true.
Adam Arkin, who was in one of my favorite 80s films ever, one called Full Moon High, which you guys probably wouldn't know too much about, but
it was on Netflix for a while.
It was. It got released on DVD here. I think we were the only country in the world to get it released on DVD. And also Scott Kahn as well, James Kahn's lad, who I see in Hawaii Five-O.
Right.
I quite like that. That's a decent remake of that show. I mean, do I like the original show better? Yeah, I do, of Hawaii Five-O. But I mean, the retelling or the reimagining of the new one, I like it because I like Scott Kahn. I think he's a good actor.
Yeah,
but
I've enjoyed the few episodes of it I've watched. I just don't regularly watch, you know, current network TV. But no, what I've seen of Five-O, it's decent.
Yeah, it's a decent show. But what else did you take from Freebie and the Bean? It's a like I said, it's a hard. I walked away from this saying I need to see it again.
Yeah,
because I found it too layered for my liking. Not for my liking, but too late for me to take in one go. You know, if you watch this and you think to yourself, oh yeah, I'll be able to get all this in one go, like Lethal Weapon, forget it. Mm-mm. No. I didn't.
No. I didn't even get that when I watched it on VHS in 2000. I said, this is a movie I'll watch again. Because there's so much going on. And, it's working on different levels. And also the political incorrectness of the dialogue, you know, kind of makes it a
oh my goodness, but yeah, I know.
Hey, it's worse than anything we've done on this show. It's like, whoa.
Well, yeah, at the time anyway, it'd probably be on par, I dare say. Because
well back then this stuff wasn't that controversial. You could say these gags didn't mean anything.
Are you talking about the one where they said at the end, oh, who was she? And James Hunt goes, a faggot?
No, there's tons of stuff in the movie that, yeah, by American standards today, it would not be allowed in a mainstream film.
No way. It'd be a uproar from GLAAD, our friends over at GLAAD, those terrorists.
And not just that. I mean, there's jokes about the Bean. I mean, just the Bean, the name of the Bean, but his Hispanic heritage. There's jokes about, you know, Freebie, and there's various ethnic groups and gags about that, you know, throughout the film.
Yeah,
like, it was no big deal back then, but yeah, nowadays you can't even get that in a major film.
All right, let me ask you this. Do you reckon they could remake this film?
They could, but it would be pretty bad.
It'd be terrible.
Yeah. It would be nobody terrible. Works like this. Excuse me. Nobody works like this today.
No. Who do you think they'd cast in this? You know who they cast in this? Jonah.
Seth Rogen.
Jonah fucking Hill and Seth Rogen.
And Channing Tatum and, you know.
Who the hell would play
George
the Bean, though?
Is the villain.
Who?
Oh, God. Probably Freddie Prinze Jr. or something.
Nah, he's a bit more smarter than that, I think.
Gosh, I don't know.
I'm not saying I want this remade. Believe me, I don't. I really don't want this remade at all.
Well, I think things about the plot, I guess you could still do it plot-wise. Nothing's too outdated there.
No.
But the scale, making it on the scale, I think they filmed it during an actual Super Bowl or when there was some big stuff going on in San Francisco. Like, all the location filming is what's so stunning about it, because San Francisco has not changed on film in, like, 40 years. It just looks the same. The buildings look the same. At one point, they're on the Embarcadero Freeway, and that's been torn down. I think it was damaged in the earthquake of the early 90s.
Right.
And the neat thing about David Fincher's movie Zodiac is he went through the trouble of having, I think, stuff like the Embarcadero Freeway CGI'd back into San Francisco for their scenes set in the 60s and 70s.
Jeez.
Which I thought was pretty cool. It's like they're paying attention to detail. But yeah, there's the city really... I was recognizing so many locations, it was hilarious. It was just like, wow, it's like nothing's changed, but I couldn't even imagine them filming something of this scale in San Francisco today.
How long did you live there for?
I was just there like one summer.
Oh, a summer. Okay, now I see.
Yeah, and I spent a few months during like a winter-spring thing, like on a job hunt, and would go there like every week just to, you know, go to Chinatown or whatever.
Chinatown.
But I know the city. Like, I know the streets. Like, I recognize them right away. It's like, oh, that Chevron station's still there. You know, you just look at stuff. It's like, oh, it's still there. Weird.
Oh, really?
Like, nothing changes. Like, New Orleans, San Francisco, and Boston never change on film. If you could watch a movie filmed in any of those cities in the 70s, it looks the same as a movie shot in those cities today.
Boston.
It is really, really, yeah.
I can never think really of Boston anymore without thinking about Garrow. That's all. It's like...
he'd tell you the same thing, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
Like, when I watched the original Thomas Crown Affair, I was like, wow, nothing's changed. And, like, Boston still looks the same.
Oh, wow. But, I mean, it's pretty much it with Freebie and the Bean for myself. I mean, it's not that hard to sort of sit down and watch. It's just a case of actually following the whole damn story is tough.
Yeah.
I mean, I found it tough anyway, because I was sort of interrupted every so often.
Right.
Does that, you know, that sort of may have hindered my, well, it probably has hindered my understanding of what went on. Because, like I said, I had to sit down at the end of the film when the end credits were going, and I said, I've got to watch this again. And I've probably got to watch it upstairs on my own, you know.
I had the unbothered. Same problem, which I think happens if your Family Guy is trying to watch this on a weekend. You know, it's like you're good at. I had interruptions, and I was just like, "Wait a minute, did I miss something?" You know, but I paused it. I know I stopped it. You know, but it's that's just kind of goes with the territory. It's a movie meant to be seen in a theater. I wish it would get a midnight movie revival of some sort, but that's not going to happen. But another thing is the Dominic Frontier score is so like rollicking and silly.
Yeah, you know, it is.
In relation to all the violence around it and craziness, it's like this really silly, jovial work.
Yeah, did you find the film maybe about 15 minutes too long?
Because
it's a long watch. It's a long watch.
It is, but, you know, it didn't bother me, because nowadays you go to a movie, like, you go see something that's about Captain America or Spider-Man, it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, yeah, I get you.
And it's a movie you assume is made for a 10-year-old kid, and it's 2.5 hours long. And so for whatever reason, this I didn't feel the length in this, because they just keep the pace going and there's always something happening. You know, that's kind of the rule is, I've heard it called the cardinal rule of Kurosawa, something on screen must be moving at all times.
Well, there's always... Know, yeah. It feels like a whole bunch of vignettes. Yeah, it feels like a whole bunch of vignettes. Whereas, you know, like we said with the Lethal Weapons, and we're not putting the boots in the Lethal Weapon at all, much. You know, we do. I do enjoy it. I just don't revisit it a great deal. It just feels like the Lethal Weapons are 48 hours, and especially the crap like 21 Jump Street these days. I'm not going to watch.
Yeah.
I forget it, you know. Sorry, Hunter, I'm not bother. Watching 21 Jump Street. Fuck that for a joke. How do you take an old Johnny Depp TV show, which wasn't any good to begin with, and make a not one but two films out of it?
Yeah, it's pushing it.
Yeah, but
well, it's for Hunter's age group.
It really is. Yeah, it really is.
It's for the under 30 crowd.
All right. Well, let's take your theory. Let's put it in revival. Let's say we're going to put it in theaters for 2 weeks. We found a print, a good looking print. We're going to remaster it and 4K it. How do you think it plays?
it might attract a cult crowd, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's it. It just, I don't. I almost feel like audiences today, people who go to the movies every week, like, are real, you know, today's young film enthusiasts, they've accepted a certain type of filmmaking. And they will not accept anything that strays from the norm too much.
So you think they'd hate it? You think they'd hate it?
Yeah, I think something from 74 that, you know, in a way they would see it as giving them too much at one time. Like with the crazy episodic nature of this movie and all the stuff going on and the sheer, like, not even intentional, like, slap in the face offensiveness. It's not even trying to be offensive. It's just the humor. That's just what was going on at the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they would be like, I'm just saying they'd be probably just alienated by it because all this old movie throwing too much at me, you know, they might see it that way.
I see what you mean, because I put it up against a film like, say, Serpico, which is a completely different film to this.
Yeah.
For instance, the trailer, have you ever seen the trailer for Serpico?
I don't know if I've seen the trailer, I've seen the movie. But
okay,
I don't know
the trailer is just one scene from the film, that's all it is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and maybe Al Pacino's name at the end, but it's not a whole bunch of snippets of the film,
right,
giving it to you in 2 minutes and 35 seconds. It's just one chunk of the film, and it's got Serpico at the end starring Al Pacino. That's it. And that's the way Serpico is, a very, very long take.
Slow burn.
Exactly, that's the word I'm for. Thanks. So, you got one end of the scale, you got Freebie and being thrown too much at you that modern audiences, the youngsters anyway, won't like.
Yep.
And you got slow burns like Serpico, which the youngsters won't like because it's too slow.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Right. So where do 70s films lie with young audiences these days? Because you hear so many things. You hear so many things heralded about, 70s cinema is the greatest. But who's saying that? You and I?
Yeah.
In our age group, because we're very close in age? Or Hunter's probably one of the real exceptions to the rule there, because he does love 70 cinema.
Right.
But he loves cinema, so...
Yeah.
But you get the younger crowd out there who, you and I know some of them who they are, and we won't mention any names.
Right.
Where do these films fall for them?
They like Jaws. Yeah. You know, they'll like Jaws and Star Wars.
Yeah, that's right, but where do films like, say, The Conversation come into it for them? Because...
They don't. I think they always, it's those type of movies. Oh, I'll get around to that eventually. I've been told it's good. You know, I think it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not really actively going out and watching. Like, lately I've been watching movies from the 30s and 40s because of the Warner Archives stream on my Roku.
Yeah.
So I'm like watching all these old films. I'm like, it's really strange to me that something from the 1940s or 30s will hold up as more entertaining and more timeless than something from like 1987.
Oh,
it's
look,
just strange.
It's you know? You know what? You could say it's strange. I don't find it strange because I watched a film, I want to say about maybe 2 years ago, from 43, a comedy, Arsenic and Old Lace. You ever seen it?
Years ago when I was a kid. Long time ago.
Man, so funny. So unbelievably funny. And you put up it against a comedy, a quote-unquote comedy film these days, and it sucks. You know, and Arsenic and Old Lace was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
So, you look at the longevity of a film like Arsenic and Old Lace, which is what? 70 years old now?
Yeah.
And that's staggering. 70 years old on, and it still holds up as a very, very funny film. We got something that's out, it's not even a freshly laid turd from 6 months ago, and it sucks.
Right.
It's awful.
Yeah. Well, it's, I finally saw the comedy Hell's a Poppin'. Which is, from like early 40s, late 30s, I forget exactly what, I think it's early 40s.
Yeah.
And it's funnier than any comedy I've seen in recent years, because that's where actually the Zucker Brothers got a lot of the airplane Naked Gun humor, was from that movie. And even the Looney Tunes duplicated gags from this film. And it was just like, it's strange that humor can be that timeless, and like this stuff is still a riot, like looking at it today, and it's old as hell. And David Lee Roth, I remember was saying that Hell's a Poppin' was a huge influence on his unmade Eat 'em and Smile script or whatever film they were making for CBS Movies in the mid-80s.
Really?
Crazy from the Heat. He was going to call it Crazy from the Heat. That's right. The script was inspired by Hell's a Poppin'.
Holy Roth.
And you can find the treatment online. It's pretty funny. But, too bad it wasn't made.
You know what?
He was doing it for CBS. Yeah.
If Lee Roth wrote a film, I reckon it'd be hysterical. I really do.
Yeah.
I reckon it'd be an absolute piss of a movie. If you let Dave be Dave and don't get right. in his way, it'd be amazing.
Well, he's got the treatment in his book, like the whole plot outline. It's just insane, and they should have made it. It would have been incredible.
Yeah.
But I mean, of course, you can imagine 80 minutes of him going wow, you know, throughout the film and stuff and the jokes. It would have been
with music by Black Oak Arkansas. We've got to throw them in there.
Exactly.
We got to get this shit out the Jim Dandy. Let him know there's three guys out there who still give a rats about Black Oak, Arkansas.
Oh, hell.
Oh, yeah. And the bikies as well. I suppose bikers dig their right. shit. But anyway, where can the audience find Freebie and the Bean?
Warner Archives has it. You can always get it on their sales. They do a few times a year where it'll be down to $10, but it's on Amazon.com. You can get the Warner Archives print there. You can also, I think you can rent it on Amazon Stream if you have Amazon Prime. You can also get the Warner Archives Roku Stream. It's on there this month. They just put it on there like the other day.
Right.
And so it was a good coincidence that you mentioned possibly doing that this morning.
Listeners, we were stumped for ideas. Initially, we were going to do the
chicken
and duck talk with the Huey Brothers, but John doesn't have it. And we tried getting the stream online, and it was a horrible print. And
yeah, the YouTube, there's three different YouTube prints up, and they're all pretty bad, and one has no subtitles. The best-looking one has no subs, of course.
Yeah, of course. I looked at that one. I thought, oh, come on, no subs. You gotta be kidding me.
They're both very murky, like, dupes from, like, old VHS tapes, and they just, you know. And I know there was a DVD that went out of print. Hopefully it'll be a Blu-ray release, and I'd love to do that movie, actually.
Oh, absolutely.
What little bit I watched, I was reminded how good it was. I was like, why didn't I get the DVD when this is available?
Well, I'll be going to my local Chinatown and trying to track that sucker down, I'll tell you that much, because we've got lots of Asian stores here to sell those movies. But I did watch, just getting on the chicken and duck talk very, very quickly, I did start watching some of it. And then my print that I got on DVD, I got off cable, off the international channel here, SBS. And it's full screen, okay, I don't mind, okay, if that's what it is, that's what it is. But it's horrible. Do you know why it's horrible, John? Because not only is the subtitles anglicized, they're Australianized as
oh,
well.
Oh, no.
I kid you not. There's one part at the very start when that couple go in there and, you know, he's got the dirty seats and stuff like that, and they want the duck soups and
right.
that. And the dog runs out, and he says, and on the one I've got on the DVD, he says here, "Hey, mate, get this bloody dog out of here."
No, no.
Yeah. I sat there with my jaw on the floor. I said, no way. That would not be how it's translated. And all the things are is mate, bloody idiot.
Oh,
I thought,
no.
Yeah. It's terrible.
They didn't like change some references to like Hugh Keys burning or anything.
No, nothing.
Bruce Spence.
No. So I was just friggin', I couldn't believe it. I'm just going, and I never noticed that before. I had never noticed it because I thought it was the way it actually translated, but it wasn't. Until I actually watched that, I watched a little bit of that one online, which had the proper translation. And I was like, this is nothing like what we've got here. So I can't watch my one now. So now I've got to track down that DVD print.
Hi, I'm Matt Dawson. I like to eat cream of shrimp soup, cream of mushroom soup. I like to eat Fig Newtons in my kiddie pool while drinking the last can of Billy Beer in existence.
Hey, I'm Bill.
Matt, do Bill.
Venezuela, motherfuckers! I wish I were dead.
No, let's see you start a story here. Wait. I really want to tell you about the story. It's going to take 10 minutes. Blah, 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 blah. I really don't want to talk about the story. And you can find those two gringos and Super Mexican on the next Super Podcast. Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
Yeah, that is one we will definitely do in the future. Chicken and Duck Talk from 1988. It's good.
I totally want to. I'd love to do like a series of Huey Brothers episodes eventually or something.
Oh my goodness! Like, yeah, Well, I looked
at
that
stuff's really worthwhile.
Well, I looked at that site you sent me that link to for their box set on Blu-ray. Yeah, $50 for the whole box set. That's cheap. That is dirt cheap.
I bought it as soon as I saw that available. I bought it. I was like, I gotta have it.
Yeah. What did it take?
Like, this is the last time ever I'm buying these movies. I bought them in every format except Laserdisc. I'm like, I'm VCD, VHS, DVD, and it's like, okay, last time I'm ever buying these. I need them anamorphic, best prints you can get, you know.
Well, they're not going to get any better than this. You know.
They're not going to come out in America. Nobody cares over here about the Hooey Brothers. So.
God, no one's ever heard of the Hooey Brothers. They haven't heard of them here. They haven't heard of them over there.
No, they haven't. It's like only in Hong Kong would they even know.
But they were massive over there, though. They were
huge. Biggest stars of the 70s. They built Golden Harvest Studio, not Bruce Lee. It was the Hooey Brothers.
Was it really?
Yes. The Hooey Brothers movies made so much money, it pretty much built Golden Harvest.
I did check up a little bit on one that Michael Hooey did called Teppanyaki. I saw that was a bit on that on online last night. But he didn't have his brothers, Ricky or Sammy, in there. So I thought, I want to see them in there, you know? Because does Private Eyes, does that have Ricky in it? It was just
Private Eyes has all three. Security Unlimited has all three. Games Gamblers Play. Ricky only has a cameo in Games Gamblers Play. And the same with the follow-up film, which was... what's the title? Oh, The Last Message.
Right.
And then they kind of had a... It was rumored to be a rift. I don't see a lot of evidence for that. I think they just went off and did their own thing.
Yeah.
Where they wouldn't appear in each other's movies anymore. Or Ricky would still appear in Michael's movies. And he would appear in Sam's movies, but they wouldn't all three appear in a movie together until Chicken and Duck Talk, where Sam makes a cameo. And then they did a reunion movie called Front Page in, like, 91.
Oh, right.
It was a remake of The Private Eyes, except they were newspaper reporters. So
right.
Just, because, yeah, or tabloid reporters.
Because didn't Sammy play in Chicken and Duck Talk, like, a Jackie Chan type?
Or just making fun of himself, really.
Oh, was he really? Like,
Yeah, because he was the highest paid movie star in Hong Kong.
Man, he bears a striking resemblance to Jackie Chan, a young Jackie Chan.
Well, he was paid more than Jackie Chan or Chow Yun Fat for any movie. Like, he was paid more than those guys combined.
Jeez.
Because he was like the Elvis of Hong Kong. He was like guaranteed box office draw. And he could ask for the money. So,
jeez.
And he was a star. Remember, he was a movie star before Jackie Chan was, or Chow Yun Fat, so he'd been around a while.
All right, well, we better save this when we do their episodes.
Yeah.
We're going to blow our stack on it now and have nothing to talk about when we actually do the show.
Pretty deep, informative episode when we get around to the Hooey Brothers. So
I think we've got to do that Chicken and Duck Talk and Private Eyes together.
Yeah.
Do a double shot of that. That would be a lot of fun. But yeah, anyway, so for those of you over here, outside North America, Amazon's your best bet, because Warner Archive, as wonderful as they are, it won't friggin' ship internationally.
Jeez.
No. I mean, the stuff I've got from Warner Archive, you know, God bless Hunter and Jedi Cole for getting that stuff out to me, because nobody else, they will not ship out to here. And I've actually got a hold of them on Twitter, and they said, unfortunately, at this time, we don't ship internationally, which means they're never going to do it.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm just purely relying on friends in America to actually get this stuff out to me, because, as you know, they've got a lot of Hanna-Barbera stuff on there. A lot. A hell of a lot.
Like, every now and then I see these Hanna-Barbera sets at Big Lots, our local discount store. And
oh, no.
Like, I think I saw Wacky Racers or something.
I got that one. Yeah.
Okay.
But you need to hook me up with that information quick, smart, as soon as you see it.
All right.
get a hold of me. I'll give my damn mobile number, cell number. You can fucking text me if you want. I don't care what time of the night it is. But yeah, because I was looking on the Warner Archive Instant, and man, they got stuff in there like Daktari playing on streaming. Hawaiian Eye, 77 Sunset Strip. Shows I've been trying to track down.
Yeah, they got all the Man from U.N.C.L.E.'s, which have been available for a while, but I've watched a few of the Hawaiian Eyes. It takes a while to get good. But,
I like 77 Sunset Strip more, though.
Right, I'm like sure it's a better show. Hawaiian Eye is a lot of going from one studio set to another and then cutting to second unit footage of Hawaii, you know, that was shot way before they even hired the actors. You know, it's a lot of, now I'm going to walk over here and talk to this secretary and this potential bad guy, you know.
Yeah.
And everything wraps up at the end. I think later it gets more Robert Conrad focused, so maybe they'll get into some fight scenes or something.
I did watch an episode of a show called Route 66.
Uh-huh.
Didn't like it. at all.
I didn't care for it either. And I remember as a kid constantly reading how good of a show it was. And then when Nickelodeon, now known as Nick at Night, I guess, on cable, was showing Route 66 on weekend afternoons,
yeah,
I would try watching it. I just couldn't get into it, and I didn't get it.
Yeah, yeah. No, they played over here on the same channel. It aired those Mickey Splay, Mike Hammer stuff from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, wow, Route 66, I want to see this. And I watched it. I taped it and watched it another day later, and... yeah, boy, was I bored of it.
Yeah, I didn't get it. And it's funny because a lot of people remember it well and talk about how great it is, and I just didn't get it at all.
Yeah.
It's not like when I watch something like, you know, I watch the Avengers or The Saint or something, and it's like, yeah, this is terrific, holds up. And then I watch something like Route 66, I'm like, ugh. I mean, even Man from U.N.C.L.E. is a tough sell for me. I've never gotten into it.
Yeah.
Even though it's a big favorite. And it's like, I think I Spy is better, and I think the British were doing better spy shows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're talking about Man from U.N.C.L.E. now, so we stray way too far from Freebie and the Band.
Yeah,
I think it's time to...
Nostalgia.
Yeah. Throw this one into the dumpster, John, like the salad and the panties. Yeah. Watch the start of Freebie and the Band, you know what we're talking about. I'm just
exactly.
Actually surprised it took them that long to see the panties in the friggin' dumpster. I'm like, there's a pair of female panties right there. Straight away I got it. And like... 2 minutes later, fishing through, and Bean goes, oh, this is for you, to Freebie. Freebie goes, you must have a nice ass.
One other weird thing I noticed about the movie, and this is really strange, is they have, like, porno mags at a bowling alley.
Oh, that's right. They had skin. What was it?
Yeah, I was just like, yeah, and then Freebie's like, yeah, kid takes us home and sprinkles all over it. But I was just like... I was just like, wait a minute, did they just sell porn at a bowling alley back in 74? It's like, man, were things that different, or was it just in San Francisco? I was like, wow, strange.
Yeah, I will say the dialogue of this film is really sharp.
Yeah.
I mean, really found myself laughing out loud quite a bit at this film. I didn't expect that, because it had been a long, long time since I'd seen it, and I just I had visual, like, very small snippets of things I remembered from it, but obviously not the whole film, and... I mean, I really found myself laughing out loud. I mean, when that car goes to that old couple's apartment window,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
got to be the first. That has to be the first, like, car goes off the ramp into somebody's house scene or something. It's like, I feel like Blake Edwards lifted a lot of this for the mid-70s Pink Panther movies.
Yeah, well, that's something ironic, because didn't Alan Arkin play an Inspector Clouseau film?
Yes, he did, and the one that didn't involve Blake Edwards. But when Blake Edwards came back to the series with Peter Sellers, he retained the screenwriter of the Alan Arkin Inspector Clouseau movie.
Oh, okay. Because I remember, well, that one was just called Inspector Clouseau, wasn't it?
Right. It was directed by Bud Yorkin. They thought they could maybe do the series without Peter Sellers. And
Blake Edwards. That was a mistake, wasn't it?
Yeah, I watched it not long ago, and I was really surprised how bad it was. I was like, geez.
Yeah.
Hideous. But they kept the screenwriter. Like, the screenwriter later wrote the next few Peter Sellers and Blake Edwards movies that were huge. Like, those were big around the globe, like, in the 70s.
Yeah, because I remember... Well, that's basically saying then that the whole blame lays on Alan Arkin, not the screenwriter.
Yeah, maybe so.
Don't know
or
why.
The director.
Yeah, it could be. Oh, God, don't mention directors. God, if they ever did a remake of this, I would not want Rob Zombie touching this. God help us all if that was the case. I mean, really,
Tyler Mayne and
with Sid Haig as the Red Myers,
yeah.
Oh God, who would you cast that? Be Tyler Mayne and Bill Moseley.
Tyler Mayne is Freebie, and Danny Trejo is the Bean.
Yeah.
Except they're long-haired badasses, and there's no subtlety whatsoever.
And it'd just be, like, peppered with, Kiss songs and... who else?
Skinnerd.
Yeah, Skinnerd. Any type of southern rock. It'd be,
and it would be set in, like, Dallas or someplace that's cheaper to shoot than San Francisco, you know.
And it'd be an editing hell to just sit through. It'd be, like, one quick cut after another.
Yeah, and Sherry Moon Zombie is the Puerto Rican wife.
Only she get a hell of a lot. She get a lot more scenes. Yeah, she get a lot more scenes in it. It'd be centered. You'd probably get more of Bean's wife than you would have Bean, I reckon.
Yeah.
I don't want my image of Free Wind of being a film I really enjoy destroyed by Rob Zombie.
Ken Foree would be there being the Alex Rocco role.
And you get
I could see it.
I don't want to see it. Oh God. I don't know. All right, okay, let's wrap it up. What are you going to give this out of a 10, John?
I give it a 10. I love it.
Oh, really? A 10?
I really do love it. I think it's about perfect time capsule of early 70s and the first of the buddy cop films are really the best. Like, watching it again, it's like nothing really compares to it. It's such a strange and endlessly watchable movie. So
okay, I'll give this about a 9. I think it just runs a tad too long, and I had a bit of trouble understanding it, but that's a 9 with an asterisk next to it, because like I said, I will definitely watch this again. What I saw, none of it bored me, though. I didn't watch any of this and think, right. Oh God, I'm getting bored. Not at all. Not throughout the whole 150 odd minutes did I think that. I noticed how quick
I just remember there is one similar movie that is on Warner Archives like this week, and it's about to be pulled, The Super Cops, with
Jackie Chan?
Ron Liebman, and I forget the other actor. It's based on a true story. It was directed by Gordon Parks. He did Shaft. It's really cool, and it's based on two real cops, and it does have a similar vibe to Freebie and the Bean, but except the characters are more ethical. Like, they're really good cops, you know. And it lacks James Caan, who really was the man of the 70s, you know, with the kind of scrawny attitude in every scene, you know.
Yeah. I think Khan's a fantastic, highly underrated as well. I mean, he's made so many good bloody movies. I mean, Thief, holy shit.
I know. Well, he wouldn't be underrated if he didn't drop out of sight for like a decade. Like, he quit making movies for a while, and I just kind of forgot how great he was. But he was the man in the 70s. Like, if James Caan was advertising a movie, people went to see it.
Like Rollerball. Actually, I really like Rollerball. I really enjoy it.
He's terrific in it. I don't think it's aged well, but he's really good in it. Like, any James Caan movie is worth watching once from the 70s. You know, Killer Elite, you know, any of those films.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's wrap it up.
All right.
You can get all our promos at the end. Blah, blah, blah. And hopefully Hunter will be back next week. And what we're doing next week, who friggin' knows? we gotta really nut this shit out and find out what we're doing next week. Sort it out very, very quick. Because, like I said, about 2 hours before record, okay, fuck it, Freebie and a Bean, let's do that. Because we just couldn't think. Because John did not want to do one that I suggested called I Am Divine. Because you just have no love for 300-pound transsexuals, do you, John? Transvestites.
No, I just don't care about... I've never cared about John Waters movies. It just never meant anything to me. It's just like, you know, I'm sure John Waters fans don't care about old westerns, so I think we're even.
Yeah. Yeah. No worries. Well, I'm a massive fan of John Waters, and after watching I Am Divine, I want to see it again. That's for sure. I think Divine's fantastic. I think he's the greatest actor of all time. No, not at all, but he was a trooper.
I've only seen Divine in two movies, and that is Alan Rudolph's Nothing But Trouble.
Right.
And I think that's what it's called. Is it Nothing But Trouble? Something like that. It's a really weird movie with Chris Christopherson.
Where he plays himself, right?
He plays a mob boss.
Yeah, he doesn't play the Divine character, is what I'm saying. He plays...
Right, he plays a mobster. And and then I also saw him play Peg Bundy's cousin or brother in an episode of
No, he never did that.
That's right. He died right before they started shooting.
He died on the day of actually shooting that.
Right. King Kong Bundy took his place.
Kong Bundy. Yeah, that was sad about Divine. They reckon it was his the one thing he was excited about the most was actually getting on the Married with Children, because he was a huge fan of the show. He died the night before.
Funny because John Candy used to do Divine on SCTV back in like 1981.
Oh, really?
And I had no idea what the joke was when I was a kid. I was so into SCTV, but I had no idea what they were making fun of. But they would have Peter Pan starring Divine. Peter Pan.
Jeez.
I mean, it just worked brilliantly. It was hilarious to me then, and then I watch it. You know, SCTV is one of those shows you'll watch later, and then now I get this joke. and I just couldn't stop laughing at it.
Damn.
Like, okay, well,
I wish I had got that.
I didn't understand.
That friggin' box set that was sitting at my, this store that wasn't, that I go past a lot. They had this whole, like, 6 or 7 disc box set of SCTV for $20. I never got it. I thought, oh, what the hell's $20 for the whole set.
Yeah. I had to get the box sets when they were coming out. I was just like, have to grab those.
Really? Oh,
that was my show. I never was big into Saturday Night Live. I loved SCTV though, like more than Monty Python.
All right. We dare say go and watch Freebie the Bee and get a hold of it somehow. I think it might even be on iTunes if you want to download it.
Yeah, highest possible recommendation. Watch it on a big screen. It's a scope movie. Don't cheat yourself.
Yeah, come to my house and watch it. We'll watch it upstairs. You're all invited.
You're right by the Porky's poster.
I'm going to get that sucker's frame, but yeah, it'll be up there someday soon. All right, until next week. Catch yous.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.